We'll do a roll call before. We are back. It is 9:58. And let's do a roll call after that short break. Dr. King.
Present.
Dr. Basile.
Here.
Mr. Leone.
Here.
Dr. Cornwall.
Here.
Mr. Greer.
Here.
Mr. Barton. Mr. Barton is still absent. Ms. Richardson?
Present.
Ms. Cardozo?
Present.
Ms. Crowley?
Here.
And I'm Judy Chepius. And Mr. Harris is also here. All right. Dr. King.
Thank you. We are going to call the matter into order for case 2119, Monica Norfleet, PT. I know we just did roll call. Do we need to do roll call again, stating everyone's position on the roll, on the board?
I'm Dr. King, members of the board. I don't think that's necessary. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Ms. Norfleet, you're present. Would you like to introduce yourself and counsel?
My name is Monica Norfleet, and I work as a physical therapist here in Tucson.
Monica, can you turn your camera on for the board, please? Thank you. My name is Kimberly Kent, and I am counsel for Monica.
Okay, thank you.
I would, Ms. Dr. King, I would like to also note that the complainant is present, MN.
Yes, I was just about to ask that. So is MN on the call? You might be muted.
Okay. Barely, I hear something.
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, good morning. Thank you. Thank you. So this interview is being held pursuant to ARS 32-2046. The purpose of an informal hearing is to hear relevant facts by way of testimony and exhibits to determine if a violation of any of the board's statutes or rules has occurred. If the board finds a violation, it may take any of the following actions: issue a decree of censure, place restrictions on a licensed practice, issue a civil penalty not to exceed $500, issue other disciplinary actions, issue a non-disciplinary order requiring completion of specific continuing education. If the board finds the violation or possible violation of statute or rule is not sufficiently serious to warrant action, the board may issue a non-disciplinary advisory letter. If the board finds that there were no violations of the board's statutes or rules, the case may be dismissed. If the board finds that the violation warrants potential suspension or revocation of the license, the board shall vote the matter to a formal hearing. At this time, Judy, would you please swear in all the witnesses?
Yes, Ms. Richardson, Ms. Norfleet, and MN, will you please raise your right hand? Do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
Let the record show that Ms. Richardson, Ms. Norfleet, and MN all answered affirmatively.
Perfect. Thank you. And as we begin, I would like to remind everyone to please refer to the patient by the initials only, and that this is being recorded, so please speak clearly and just one person at a time. Mindy, would you please give us an overview of the complaint?
Yes. Board open complaint 2119 after review of the complaint from a patient, MN. MN alleged that a PT aide inappropriately massaged her buttock area underneath her clothing. The aide at the time was under the supervision of Monica Norfleet, PT, at the time that this occurred. Based on medical record review and interviews, additional potential violations were included for the board's consideration, which they adopted. Those potential allegations include ARS 32-2044, engaging in the performance of substandard care by a physical therapist, ARS 32-2044-6, failing to supervise assistive personnel, physical therapy students, or interim permit holders in accordance with this chapter and rules adopted pursuant to this chapter, ARS 32-2044-13, charging unreasonable or fraudulent fees for services performed or not performed, ARS 32-2044-20, failing to maintain adequate records. R-424-304, adequate patient records, which included specifically A-3-E and A-4 and C. At the April 26th initial review, the board voted this case to an informal hearing, but they requested additional information be provided, which is included in your materials. You specifically wanted to know if there was a definition of routine tasks that was articulated in other physical therapy boards or professional associations, and if there were any additional things precluding a patient from being billed for services provided to an aide. That information is provided to you. I looked at, based on Dr. Basilio's recommendation, who had presided over the meeting, I pulled the Arizona statute definition as well as the surrounding states for their state boards. You also have in front of you the statements by the APTA and the Federation of State Boards of Physical Therapy. In addition, I included several states that appear to have specific language in their statutes and rules that might be of help in defining routine tasks, but I would caution the board that they need to adjudicate this case before you based on the facts presented presently with Arizona statutes and rules. This case is for your review.
Thank you. Ms. Norfleet or Ms. Kent, would either of you like to make an opening statement?
No, thank you.
Okay, thank you. And then patient MN on the call, are you willing to answer questions from the board?
Yes, I am.
Okay, thank you so much. Okay, at this time, board members, do you have questions for Ms. Norfleet?
I can start. So, Ms. Norfleet, one of the questions that I have is just in regards to just how your practice works in terms of your utilization with techs. So, from you know the report that we've read and the statements that we've heard, it sounds like the tech that was working with you was performing manual treatment with MN. Is that a common practice in your clinic? You know, with how you handle things with patients, and if so, how are you determining just the skill level of that technician and whether it's appropriate for that technician to deliver those services?
Yes, he is allowed to go ahead and do massage for us. We normally will discuss the area that needs to be treated. Because of his years of practice and the types of things that he and I have talked over as far as massage techniques, what kinds of things he feels when he palpates, the areas that I want him to focus on, I felt very confident of his expertise with his years of practice for him to continue on a massage on the patient.
Is this something that is a skill that you work with him on as well? Like, do you guys kind of do breakouts where you're kind of showing him different techniques? Is this something that he learned specifically in school and that was the only kind of like training he's had in regard to it? And also, have you ever, trying to think of how to word this. Have you ever had him demonstrate those skills to you, not on a patient, you know, whether it's with somebody in the clinic to ensure that he's safe to do that, anything like that?
Right. Yes. No. He did learn massage techniques in school. He went to physical therapy technician school with Pima Medical Institute. And this was, I want to say 1984. So he has been doing physical therapy tech work for three different companies. And we do practice on each other. Certain areas where I want him to really understand what I'm looking at. If he goes in to do a massage, for example, on the shoulder, we definitely will palpate on each other so that he knows exactly where I want him to work.
Okay. And then can you just explain what was the, like, how did things go as far as when MN arrived to the clinic that day? The process that you go through in terms of making the decision that it is appropriate to delegate that task to the technician. Can you just kind of run through what did it look like that morning? What did you do and in terms of proceeding with that?
That morning, I don't recall if it was Michael or myself who brought MN into the clinic. I do remember talking with her. And then Michael alerted me to the other patient I had that same hour that she had had a very bad night and was in more pain. So I asked MN if it was all right for Michael to go ahead along with her treatment that she has had several times before. So there were no new things to be added that day. And then I went to see the other patient. So later on, I was able to come in and just make sure that everything was going well with MN's current treatment for that day. I proceeded to go back to the other patient and work with her. And then I came in to check on MN, and they were already positioned for her massage treatment. She was laying on her left side. I wanted to make sure that Michael understood what area to be treated that day, as we had discussed that morning. I was in the room when Michael was doing the treatment part of the massage, wanting to make sure he did focus on the right side of the gluteal region where there was a nodule, which where she was having more pain with. Everything was going fine. So I exited out of the room, went back to my other client. I did enter the room back again when MN was already set up on the pelvic traction when she was laying on her back with the heat. Asked if everything was going okay again. She said yes. I asked her if the traction had been helping, and she said yes, that, you know, it had reduced her symptoms. So she was, you know, on a timer at that time for the rest of her treatment. As the treatment ended that day, I was able to talk with her as she was exiting the room, and I said, did everything go okay? Are you still feeling good? And she said yes. And that was the treatment for the day.
Okay. And then as far as the documentation goes, so as I was reviewing for that day, I noticed you billed 15 minutes of manual therapy in there. Is that the time that was associated with the technician providing the massage treatment, or did you provide any additional manual treatment with her that day?
I only went in to make sure that the massage was taking place at the appropriate place. I did look to where Michael was performing the massage. I did not add any manual work that day for her.
Okay, so it's safe to say that the billing associated with that was for the time that he provided the manual treatment with the patient?
Yes, for the massage.
Okay. And then, and for the other board members on here, correct me if I'm wrong on this, but I believe when I was reviewing the notes, and I'm trying to pull them up again here just to make sure that I'm saying the right thing, I don't believe it specified the manual treatment that day as massage necessarily. It looked like it was more referring to it as mobilization. Mm-hmm. Is that your guys' understanding of it as well?
Yes, if I recall, I believe it was noted soft tissue mobilization.
Did it say soft? Okay. That's what, oh, okay, yeah, STM right here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I just wanted to clarify on that just to make sure that it was massage related and not necessarily joint mobilization related, since that's kind of what we're talking about here.
Yeah, it was noted soft tissue mobilization.
Okay. That's all the questions I have for now. Thank you very much, Ms. Norfleet.
Yes. Karen, do you have some questions for Ms. Norfleet?
Ms. Norfleet, do your technicians have their own schedule?
No.
Okay. And I guess my other question would be, how would you differentiate soft tissue mobilization from massage?
For me, soft tissue mobilization would be working on the area if there were any muscle spasms to help relax that particular area. Elongate the muscle a little bit better so that it can relax. That would be, to perhaps do a that would be more friction massage. That would be about it, really.
Okay.
Related to that question, this is Dr. Cornwall. That description you just gave me, it sounds really more like massage. It's all the things that a massage is supposed to do as well. What's the difference in the technique?
I would think it would be more the pressure to alleviate any particular pain that's happening. More for elongating the muscle if it is in a spasm.
Okay. You have reviewed with your technician the difference between massage and soft tissue mobilization. He understands that they are different and how to do them differently.
Yes.
Okay. So that day, did you instruct him to do massage or soft tissue mobilization?
I had him do the soft tissue mobilization. He always starts off with more of an effleurage type of technique just to understand perhaps the area of pain that particular day. If there is any muscle spasms to be released, to perhaps work on that area a little bit more. As I went into the room that day, there was a particular nodule on the proximal gluteal region that we were focusing on to see if we could relax that a little bit better.
Okay. Right. And is it common for him to do his soft tissue mobilization or massage skin on skin, or is it more done through clothing?
It is skin on skin.
Okay.
Ms. Norfleet, I have a question, please. So you stated just now that there was a particular nodule you were working on, but yet you said you didn't provide any hands-on assessment of the tissue? How were you aware of a nodule?
Just because of the previous time before, this had been a consistent area that was still there. When I went into the room, I wanted to make sure that Michael did find that same area, and the patient did agree, yes, he is on that spot. So I knew that it was still there.
Before this session, when was the last time you provided soft tissue to that area?
It was probably the treatment before that. As I look at my notes here. Yes, I had done the treatment before that, which was on June 21.
Can you describe what that treatment was around this soft tissue and nodule?
From my standpoint, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I just wanted to say what you documented. Like, what did you document around that soft tissue?
The documentation on that.
Mm-hmm.
Are we talking about June? Hang on. Are we talking about June 21st or June 25th?
We're talking about her last session with the patient where she did soft tissue and identified a nodule.
So
June 21st, it sounds like.
Yeah, you need to direct your attention to your note on June 21st. And if you need to read the whole thing before you answer Ms. King's questions, that's okay. They'll be patient. Right?
Mm-hmm.
My note on June 21st, in regards to the soft tissue mobilization, it was to the L5 on the left, the SI and the hip rotator's origin on the SI region. Noted nodule size of 1/4. Most pain of this region and causing localized burning pain. And then I had done some manual traction on that area.
Can you just talk me through when you delegated to your tech how to address this, the nodule you identified? How did you describe to him what he needed to do?
I told him that to be careful of that one spot because it is painful. He was aware that she had had previous back surgery. I believe that was 5 years ago. But still to be aware of the areas. As he was massaging the lumbar spine, as I recall, down to the proximal glutes, I told him, as I mentioned before, that spot was the most painful spot, and just gently work it so that it would relax the muscle tissue.
Looking then at your documentation after his treatment on this date that it is in question, how did you know what to document how that soft tissue had responded to his treatment?
Well, both of the patients telling me that it was that, you know, it had helped as she was leaving. And also talking with him after the visit, I said, you know, did you feel that nodule? And he said, yes, you know, it is painful for her. And I said, you know, it just didn't go away, did it? And he said, no, it was still there. And so that's why I continue to document that it was still occurring, that the nodule was still there.
Okay. But you had asked him to do that soft tissue to help release it.
Mm-hmm.
And he then assessed that it didn't release and let you know that it didn't change.
It did not change.
Okay. And is it routine for you to ask your techs to assess the patient's response to therapeutic treatment and report back to you so you can document?
It's part of what I normally like to go in while they're doing the soft tissue mobilization. If there is a question about the area, I will definitely put my hands on the patient and guide him into staying on a particular area or to change his manual technique so that it's more soothing to the patient.
But I believe your testimony was that did not happen in this session. You didn't put your hands on and assess the tissue following his intervention.
No, because by that time she had already been placed on the sling in that particular position when she was laying on her back. And then seeing her as she was walking out the door.
Do you mind describing to us some other things that you delegate to techs that you would consider routine?
Application of any thermomodalities. Routine starting at the top of our day. He collects all of the flow sheets for the day so we know who is coming in. He brings the patients back. He gets an initial sentence or two on how they're doing that day. If all is going well, he lets me know. If things are not going well, he definitely lets me know so that I can further attend to the patient that has more complaints that day. He is trained on how to set patients up for exercise equipment, giving cues for correct techniques of body mechanics, et cetera, and how to perform the exercises, et cetera. He has performed the other modalities such as ultrasound, placement of TENS unit, ice packs, et cetera. He has done some.
Instead of saying et cetera, I think it would be better if you answered her specifically about tasks, okay?
Okay.
So more specific and detailed. That's what Ms. King, I believe, is wanting. Mm-hmm.
Well, in addition to what I've already mentioned, he's always, because of his expertise in the past and how he and I have worked in the past, he is always setting up the next item. If he sees that a patient is going to be going to a different room from the gym or vice versa, setting up that area so that it's ready, clean, and ready to go. Other tasks would be, besides setting up the modalities, patient positioning, it is also assisted in some massage, soft tissue mobilizations for shoulders, elbows, knees, ankles. I think
perhaps it would help, Monica, if you told Ms. King the things you don't delegate. What things do you not delegate to technicians?
any manual mobilizations that need to be performed on that patient that day. Checking for joint mobility, assessing gait, whether or not to continue on a certain exercise that's been listed on the flow sheet to start a patient on. Assessing the patient if they're ready for the next level of resistance, whether it be free weights or TheraBands. Those would be more my assessment techniques on how the patient was doing after the last time I had my my hands working on their shoulder, for example, my assessment on how it's changed from the previous appointment to the next appointment, on whether or not, like I said before, whether or not they're ready to proceed to the next activity level.
Just to clarify, you mentioned that you wouldn't delegate mobilization techniques, yet he's doing soft tissue mobilization. Can you be a little more clear on what types of mobilization that you do delegate to a tech versus what you don't delegate?
What I would delegate for the mobilization part is just more relaxation of the muscle tissue to use his massage techniques to elongate the muscle for that particular body part.
Okay, thank you.
So in that case, he's doing massage. This is Dr. Cornwell again. You would bill that as massage, correct?
Mm. I'm sorry, say it again.
He did massage like you directed. So you would bill that as massage, correct?
The billing code for what covers the massage, soft tissue mobilization, is what I had placed down for her charges on MN. There is another billing code that states massage, but there's no I don't think that there's any payment on that. There's a lot of insurances that don't recognize that charge as just straight massage.
So I'm a little confused now, because basically you're telling us that he did massage. So we can call it soft tissue mobilization, but he accomplished the elongation of the tissue, the relaxation, reducing pain by massaging. But you didn't put in a charge for massage because you knew it wouldn't get paid. So doesn't that mean you put in a charge that you knew that you were going to get paid, even though it didn't quite fit?
That's the particular charge that we've used all along.
I don't doubt that you might have used it for a very long time, but I'm asking, do you think that would be the most appropriate charge?
I guess it would be.
Usually codes are designated for things that require some type of skill, either by a physical therapist or a physical therapist assistant. And things that don't require that kind of skill, are not coded or are coded without payment. So now we're kind of faced with you're asking him to do something that he's not really skilled or trained to do. He sounds like he's He's pretty good at general massage, pressure relief, that kind of thing. But that doesn't mean that he's a skilled physical therapist or a skilled physical therapist assistant.
I completely am in favor of him doing the soft tissue mobilization just because of the types of things that we have gone over together, he and I. As far as using the massage charge, like I said, we've always just used the manual charge for the massage. So,
Mr. Cornell, can I just ask for a clarifying response to your question?
Sure.
So, Monica, Mr. Cornwell wants to know is, did you authorize him to perform massage, or did you authorize him to perform soft tissue mobilization? And because I think Mr. Cornwell is believing that you're describing massage, and I don't know if we're talking about, you know, if we're just walking all over terms. So let's just be clear. Do you believe that this technician is trained to perform soft tissue mobilization? And if you can answer that yes or no, I think it would help the board. And is that why you billed for it, or did you believe that he was only trained and qualified to provide massage therapy and your billing and coding is pursuant to your clinic's practice? So if you can answer that, I think it would help. I'm not sure if that's what Mr. Cornwell was getting at, but I think that's what he was getting at.
I do think that Michael is very well trained for the soft tissue mobilization. Again, okay. He and I have talked about the level in which I want him to perform that technique. He knows that if there's other structures there that need more work, he will inform me, and then I will do the other manual techniques that I know to relieve that area.
So you believe that the physical therapist has the scope of practice of manual mobilization, but that the technician in this case is trained to do soft tissue mobilization? And if you could describe the differences between those to the board, I think that would help.
Between the
manual mobilization versus soft tissue mobilization. I'm not sure I understand.
And I'm not sure that that's even in question, because there was no like manual mobilization provided. And so I don't know that that's actually the question. The question is, delegating massage versus soft tissue mobilization, which I'm not convinced quite yet that Ms. Norfleet is able to articulate the difference. And then on the billing for that particular date, it was soft tissue mobilization, L5, to a nodule the size of a quarter, yet she didn't assess it, and manual lumbar traction were what was billed for that day that the tech actually provided the hands-on treatment. So I think we're trying to figure out what's the difference and what she does and does not delegate as far as soft tissue work goes to a tech, and if any of it is actually considered routine to delegate to a tech who is not licensed, not certified.
I guess I have a question that may help. May not, but you'll let me know. My question, Ms. Norfleet, is, have you had additional training in soft tissue techniques since PT school?
Yes.
And what have you taken?
Along the lines of strain counter strain, along the lines of joint mobilizations, myofascial release, those types of things.
Are these the techniques that you have trained Michael in?
No. That would be something that I would do.
So from my perspective, I believe that massage and soft tissue mobilization are two different things. I believe that mobilization, once you've added that term in, requires constant assessment and treatment and reassessment and as an ongoing method of seeing what's happening not only beneath your hands but with the patient and the response of that patient. And and I guess my perspective on that is that a technician is not trained in those clinical reasoning skills to provide reassessment. They may be able to do a technique, but their ability to reassess and make adjustments within a treatment session may not be what we want for the public.
Thank you, Karen.
Well, I would be glad to document things differently and to charge things differently as needed. In our clinic, that's just the verbiage that we've always used, is just soft tissue mobilization for massage. So I, with the other charge being there, I would definitely go ahead and use that so that it is appropriately charged.
Just to clarify on my end, so it sounds like for you, Ms. Norfleet, soft tissue mobilization and massage are one and the same. There's no difference between the two. Am I correct in that assumption?
In our clinic, that's what we have always called it. So manual work that needs to be done as far as mobilizations, we would definitely list that as part of our treatment.
And when you say mobilizations, then, and again, coming from the idea that massage and soft tissue mobilization for you, they seem to be one and the same. When you refer to, like earlier you said, manual mobilizations, are you referring to like joint mobilization at that point?
Either that or different manual techniques as far as the soft tissue work, like strain, counter strain, contract, relax, those kinds of things.
Okay, so things that would be kind of outside of the realm of what people would look at as like typical massage techniques or,
right,
you know, things of that nature.
Right.
So hypothetically, let's say that your tech came in and did massage / soft tissue mobilization. You came in afterwards, did some reassessment, and felt like strain, counter strain, or myofascial release was warranted, and you performed that.
Yes.
How would you bill those two things? Would you bill them both as manual therapy? Would you bill one as massage, the other one as manual therapy? How would you differentiate in the bill the difference between the two?
In the past, that's the it would be under manual therapy.
Okay, that seems somewhat logical. The problem I have is that it doesn't distinguish between the two things. One was provided by a skilled physical therapist licensed in in the state. And the other one's provided by an experienced tech, but not licensed or skilled in particular techniques. So how you can't differentiate them on the bill.
I would also add, you can't differentiate it in the clinical notes either.
Mm-mm.
Because there isn't anything that identifies which procedures the aide provided versus what Ms. Norfleet provided.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm seeing that as well. And if I didn't know an aide treated this patient, I would assume that it was all treated by the physical therapist and signed as such. Are there any further questions for Ms. Norfleet? Does the board have any questions for patient for the patient? MN.
Yeah, I do. MN, my question for you is, or I guess I have a couple of questions. So when Ms. Norfleet came into the room and was speaking with you and, you know, going over things with the technician that we've been discussing as well, did you consent to having the technician perform the massage or the soft tissue mobilization techniques on you?
I don't remember for that exact date. I do know that in the past I had been asked, and there were other days when I was not asked at all. When I would just see Monica at the beginning, when she would go over what the therapy would entail that day, and then she would leave for the rest of the day. So really can't speak to exactly that day, whether I was asked or not.
Okay. But if not asked, about your consent to that, just based on the previous visits that you were coming in, would it have been safe to say that it was implied that you were consenting to it because there was no, you know, argument against it, you know, when it started happening, or would that be a false claim?
No, that would be true. There was consent was implied. Yes.
Okay. And then my next question is, as far as the detail that we've gotten on what area was being worked on. So we've heard, you know, in some of the testimony that has come through from the technician that was performing it, from Ms. Norfleet, and then we've heard from your testimonies as well. Can you explain to us where exactly was the technician working on while performing the massage? And if you could kind of give to the best that you're able to, you know, I know, you know, if you don't have a lot of experience with anatomy and whatnot, but the best that you can in terms of giving us kind of, you know, pinpointed areas, where was he working specifically on you when the incident occurred or the in question?
Well, it's below the waist and above the glutes. I would call it the back of the hip area is what I would call it. I know that I was asked to pull my waistband down below the waist to expose the area, and that's the only way I know how to describe it.
Okay. So as far as the area that was exposed, is it safe to say that it did your pants line did not go below the glute area?
That is correct. It did not.
Oh, I think Giovanna, you froze. Patient MN, I have a question. This is Dr. Kelly King. When you first started responding to Mr. Leone's questions, you made mention that there were days that the PT, Ms. Norfleet, would come and talk with you about what was going to happen, and then you wouldn't see her for the rest of the session. So Were there days when the entire physical therapy session was completed by the tech?
Yes, there were those days.
Thank you.
This is Karen Bustillo. Had you been asked to pull the waistband of your pants down for other treatment sessions or just this particular one?
The other treatment sessions for the same area, I was asked to pull down to that area, yes.
Okay.
I have a question back to Ms. Norfleet, if that's okay. So given testimony from the patient that there were therapy sessions in which you provided no skilled physical therapy intervention for the patient, yet documented and billed, can you just tell me how you would document the entire therapy session from which you didn't actually participate?
Most of the treatments, Michael would go ahead and do the exercise portion of the therapy treatment. He would also do the setup for the sling traction.
Set up and actually implement the sling traction. So set up, put her in it, and complete a sling traction?
Correct.
Okay. And then your documentation, how did that come to be if you actually didn't provide the treatment?
There was always part of the treatment that I would be implementing with and providing for. I believe there was one other time where Michael did the full treatment as opposed to myself, as I had an evaluation at that same hour. I always go in with the patient and make sure things are going well when they first come into the clinic so that I know what kind of plan we're going to have for that day. So there wasn't anything alarming as far as many of her treatments were provided. I felt confident that the tech would carry out the rest of the treatments, which was just basically the exercises and the sling traction.
I'm assuming then you assume traction is a routine task that can be delegated to a tech.
Yes.
Ms. King, can I just follow up with one question to Ms. Norfleet? Just one follow up to what you asked her.
Yes.
Ms. Norfleet, do you agree with the patient's description that basically you saw the patient at the door and didn't have anything to do with her afterwards, that Michael assumed care for the patient at the visit? Because that's what it sounded like.
No.
Do you agree with that? Well, you need to tell this board that. That's what they're asking you about.
So other than talking with her at the very beginning of her treatments, there was always eyes on and supervision of the patient on how she was doing with her exercises. I would be in one room with a curtain open. They would be out in the gym, or I would be in the gym and they would be in the room with the curtain open performing the exercises. So they were always under supervision.
I think for me, I'm having a very difficult time identifying that the therapeutic intervention and value that just eyes on brings to a patient's physical therapy session for which you're documenting things that occurred and billing for. And it, with all due respect, you did state that there was a session that he did the entire session because you had an evaluation at the same time.
Right.
Thank you.
During that particular visit, I did go and make sure that everything was proceeding as normal as far as how the patient was doing, if there was any pain that she was feeling with the exercises, so that I did take a break from the evaluation visit to make sure everything was going as planned.
I don't have any further questions. Does anyone have any further questions for Ms. Norfleet or the patient?
Just one quick clarification from the documentation. So under manual therapy, it also specifies manual lumbar traction. Was that provided by the technician that day as well?
Other than just tissue elongation, no.
Okay. So if you're documenting manual lumbar traction, is that something that you would classify as that, as tissue elongation? Or are we talking, you know, what we would typically consider manual traction, where you're actually trying to decompress the spine?
I would do more of a manual technique for that particular verbiage for the manual traction. I did tell Michael before he went into with MN to do some stretching of the tissue elongation along with his massage, but not to do the manual traction because of the sling traction that was going to be provided that seemed to be working better for her.
Okay. So is manual lumbar traction being documented under manual therapy here? Is that a mistake? Is that just something that was carried forward in the EMR?
And it was something that was carried forward, and I did not correct that.
Okay. Just wanted to get clarity on that. Thank you.
Board members, are there any further questions? Are you okay if we go into deliberation discussion?
I think so.
Okay, so this concludes the interview and questions process of the hearing. At this time, the board will go into deliberation and ask that there be no further questions or comments by the licensee, counsel, or complainant while deliberating the case. Before we do that, I do want to provide Ms. Norfleet or Ms. Kent an opportunity to provide a closing statement, and then we'll go into deliberations. Would you like to provide a closing statement?
Monica, do you have anything you want to add? I have a couple of things that I'd like to add.
The only thing I would like to add is that all of our patients are highly supervised, making sure that quality of care is provided. There are other eyes from the other two therapists and the assistant that work with me that always provide supervision. If I am not available to come out of a room at that particular time, all of the technicians know that they can rely on the other therapists on any questions that they may have, or any questions that they may have in the treatment or with exercises, etc. So our technicians are highly supervised. I feel on that particular day in question that I felt that I supervised the treatment appropriately. If given the point in time to have done the manual portion of that treatment, I would have, but because of how my other patient was in pain, I decided that my time needed to be focused on her. The time in which I entered the room during the massage part of the treatment, there was no particular distress or anything that I noted, and everything seemed to be going well between the patient and her treatment at that time.
Ms. Kent?
Thank you, Ms. King. I will try and be brief. I just want to remind the board that this is an allegation that the patient made against the technician, Soltera, with the concern after she spoke to her sister that perhaps this massage technique had exceeded the scope of propriety. I don't think the evidence supports ill motive by Soltera. I hope you've listened to his interview. He's very articulate. He's highly trained. He's highly experienced. And he pays attention to Ms. Norfleet regarding his boundaries about the scope of his practice. But even if we assume for a moment that he somehow exceeded the permission by the patient, which I don't think the evidence supports, there's absolutely no evidence, zero evidence, that Ms. Norfleet would have had any reason to suspect impropriety by this technician at any time, even before, during, or after this event. It's important to note that both the patient and the technician testified or made statements under oath that it, I lost you there for a minute. Did you lose me?
Mm-mm.
Okay. Both the patient, even the patient wasn't sure if this had exceeded impropriety. She questioned it herself, and it was only after speaking to her sister, a lawyer, that she felt like it she needed to file a complaint. No problem with that being investigated. The patient, the technician testified that he always felt like he had the patient's permission, that he had acted appropriately, and that no one had any reason to know of any reason that this therapy, whether it's massage or soft tissue mobilization, I want to speak to that in a minute, but whether it's massage or soft tissue mobilization, there's no evidence that of a risk of impropriety. I just want to remind the board that this is a technician who has worked for over 30 years in this field. And he went to school, and all of the items, if you listen to his interview, he was trained to perform, including massage therapy, including all the things that the clinic had decided was in the scope of his practice. But I also want to now address this argument that that Ms. King was not as involved as she was, as reflected in the notes. And I wanted to point out that in the interview of the patient, she testified that she had a calendar at home that showed that her contact was with the therapist, Monica Norfleet, every day. Now, that calendar wasn't requested and it wasn't produced for the board, but in a court of law, that is evidence of what actually occurred and who was actually involved in the patient's care, and that was Ms. Norfleet. And so I think it's important that this board at least take notice of that calendar, because these are real-time evidence of who was involved in the patient's care. Now, Ms. Norfleet has never had a board complaint, never had a lawsuit, and is working in a clinic that she's worked for a long time with a technician she trusts. The patient's treatment occurred in the middle of the therapy room with a curtain, not a closed door. And so on-site supervision, according to the statutes, includes exactly what was described here. Exactly what was described here. The statutes and the regulations permit her to supervise with her eyes, with her on-site supervision, and then, of course, she has to be physically involved. The error, though, that Ms. Norfleet did make is that she did not, in in our opinion, both hers and mine, properly document what tasks were performed by the technician when he performed them versus her. And so she has since changed her practice. And so now the technicians at their clinic or under her supervision must initial the flow sheet to so that it's very clear what they perform. I wanted to let the board know that she acknowledges an error made in that regard. And I think that's an error that's been corrected. The question of billing is an interesting one because I think I can produce for the board a billing coding specialist that would testify that the billing that was done in this case is appropriate within the standard of care, follows the statutes, and follows the regulations. So if there's questions about the billing, I would be happy to at least or ask the board to consider allowing us to produce evidence from a billing coding specialist. I don't think you have enough here to make the assumption that that a technician, well, first of all, let me just say this. Miss Norfleet's billing reflects her involvement in the patient's care, period. And that was every single visit. And so the question of whether that's improper under the billing and coding laws, that's, I think we have a billing coding expert that would testify that it is. I don't think that factually she agrees with the patient. And that's a, you know, the point that you have to look at is we have a calendar by the patient that has Monica Norfleet involved in every visit. We have notes from Norfleet that could not be documented unless she was involved. And so we have a medical chart and we have Norfleet's testimony and we have Michael Sotera's testimony. So I think the evidence supports that Norfleet was involved sufficient to bill for every single visit under the physical therapies statutes. I think if we went to Medicare and Medicaid and asked them, can you bill if the physical therapist is supervising the therapy under it? And I think that the answer is yes. I think that the billing and coding specialist would say yes. And Mindy's shaking her head no.
Medicare specifically precludes aides from, they can provide the care, but you can't bill for anything an aide provides.
Correct.
Yeah, that is correct.
Yep.
Well, and I guess insurance companies disagree. I think that there's certainly no evidence that Ms. Norfleet had a mens rea. In other words, I think she genuinely, if she did it wrong, if she billed incorrectly, it was an innocent mistake, certainly not intentional mistake. This is something that her clinic has done, her supervisor has done, her supervisor has taught her, and the clinic apparently has done for a long time. So if it's wrong, it was done under the instruction of the owner of the clinic, who's also a physical therapist. I feel compelled to share some concerns about the investigation in this case, and that is that there were several leading questions by Mindy Richardson to the patient during the interview at the beginning and in the middle, which then adds to the description of the evidence later on. And that concerns me because the board's job is to fact find. Especially the investigator's job. The investigator's job is to present the facts to the board and so that the board can make a decision. And I think the continued practice of leading questions by an investigator is improper. I think that it denies the respondent due process. And I ask you to consider working with your investigator to reformat those questions. And I have more to say about that, but I don't want to take up your time. I think that's sufficient. The one thing, though, I want you to know that was a violation of the statutes in this case is that the investigator shared her quote unquote concerns about violations of the statute with the patient. And that is in violation of the statute governing confidentiality of investigations, ARS 32-4045E. If there are concerns about this respondent's care, that should come from the board and solely from the board. By telling a patient during a fact-gathering interview that the investigator believes there are violations of the statute, that usurps the authority of this board, and it's improper. It's a violation of the statute. I understand that we're human and we're all trying to do the best job we can, Norfleet, Richardson, all of us. But I want you to know I have grave concerns about that procedure, because it leads to the manipulation indirectly of evidence in any case. And I think it might have influenced the patient in this case. I'm not sure why, for example, we never saw a calendar that shows that Norfleet was involved on every visit. So I think that's all I have to say.
Thank you, Ms. Kent. Thank you. Okay, so then at this time we will go into discussions and deliberation, and again ask that no further questions or comments by a licensee or counsel or complainant while we deliberate the case. Board members, again, I would like to go through each of the allegations and determine if the evidence and the testimony that we have before us constitutes a violation of our state statutes and laws and rules. So the first one is ARS 32-2044, engaging in the performance of substandard care by a PT. In the investigative report, this was summarized in delegating the treatment. Was it actually routine? Sorry about that. Allowing an aide to modify an exercise, an evaluation piece is missing. So what are your thoughts? Do you have discussion concerns?
I have trouble with delegation of a technician to perform any type of hands-on treatment, regardless of their years of experience. I feel like we've been trying to elevate the standards of practice in physical therapy over the years to have physical therapy provided by a physical therapist or a physical therapist assistant. And that any type of manual contact is not routine care.
I struggle with this one because I agree with you also, Dr. Bustillo. Like, I don't personally see it as routine tasks. That is not something that any clinic I've ever worked in that we looked at as, you know, okay to be doing. Where I struggle with it is that our statutes really don't give a clear definition of it. So it leaves it open to the interpretation of another therapist to say, mm-hmm. Well, if this person is qualified to do it and I've, you know, checked their skill set and I believe that it's safe for them to provide it, then who's to say that they can't say that would be a routine task for their technician to perform? So that's kind of where my struggles are with this. In regards to the billing, that's a hard one too. Well, is that something I should bring up later, Dr. King, since we're going over a different statute?
Yeah. If you could hold that, until okay. We get to that allegation, yes. And Giovanni, I totally understand what you're saying. I think the key here is, what do we define as a standard of care for physical therapy, right? We have people who are extensively educated, licensed, vetted, compliant, you know, deemed competent. If we could delegate all of those things to someone who we just train on our own, then where's the value, right?
Yeah.
So I think that that's the key piece that we have to decide when we are deciding routine, and what does training look like and what falls under that, versus what truly requires the skilled and educated hands, assessment, clinical decision making of the licensed or certified person who's delivering that care.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought that up, because that's actually where I was going to go with it. So for me, with this, the issue is not so much in my mind, again, you know, my belief is completely different, but my issue is not necessarily that she delegated massage to the technician to perform that if she felt he was skilled enough to do it. My issue here is more along the lines of, it doesn't sound like any true assessment was really done with this patient. Mm-hmm. And by that, I mean going into the room, her putting her hands on the patient, checking for where that nodule was, you know, and then delegating based off of her knowledge of that assessment. Because as we all know, you know, not even a PTA is allowed to be assessing a patient. You know, we can Correct. Use our critical thinking, you know, mm-hmm. in terms of what's going on, but anything assessment based has to be done through the PT. So if a PTA can't do the assessment, I don't see how that could be done by the technician in the same regard. So I would completely agree with you on that. That, I think, is really where the problem lies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's very different to delegate supervising 10 reps of a short arc quad, you know, versus putting your hands on and assessing the response of the tissue to the treatment. The other thing I do want to point out in documentation wise, as far as delegating, the note dated 6/18 notes a nodule and that same exact treatment on the right side. The next two notes indicate the nodule and treatment on the left side. So I'm not even sure that we know assessment wise where we were treating for this patient.
Yeah.
Okay, and then that makes it even more complicated to delegate and identify what a routine task is. She did identify routine tasks as eStim, traction, soft tissue, assessing, talking to the patient, checking in on them first, and then going and talk to her. And then she, if they're good, she goes in and they go ahead. So I think the key here is how we define routine and what's appropriate to delegate to a tech. Mark, do you have anything to weigh in on this?
Not a whole lot different. I think that, because our statute is so non-specific, I would say that delegating massage would be considered a routine. It's a, mm-hmm. it's a fine line between massage and soft tissue mobilization, however, and everything that I'm not aware of, read about, is that manual soft tissue massage includes a wide range of things, and they're all manipulation, either joint and soft tissue, and require skilled care. So that's where my line is that I don't have any problem with her sending Michael in to do a massage, but let's call it what it is. It was a massage.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If you want to call it soft tissue mobilization, then he probably shouldn't have been doing it. Okay. And that she should have provided that care. And then billing should reflect exactly what you did.
Mm-hmm. Karen, do you have any comments about ARS 3220.44 before we move on?
Well, actually, I think, again, Mark articulated that very well, at least differentiating massage and soft tissue. And so I do think that that's probably the crux of it. And I do understand the issue with being able to delegate whatever you feel the person is capable of doing.
to a patient. So it's an issue.
Thank you. Unless we have any other discussion about the investigation and the responses for that particular allegation, let's move on to ARS 32-2044-6, failing to supervise assistive personnel. This again has to do with delegating care treatment to a therapy aide. She noted the aide was highly skilled in performing manual therapy. The question here again is appropriate delegation of a routine task to an aide, to a tech.
We just talked about that.
Any further discussion about that?
I can see how you link those two together, but I think it would be, for me, it'd be cleaner just to keep them separate. And therefore, I think she did oversee him and told him what she wanted, checked back in after the treatment was delivered. I think she could have put her hands on the patient during that visit, but overall, I think she did supervise the tech.
And I would agree with that based on what we heard.
I agree as well.
Mr. Greer, do you have any thoughts or comments?
I agree with that as well.
Okay, thank you. All right. So then moving into ARS 32-2044-13, charging unreasonable or fraudulent fees for services performed or not performed. I know, Mr. Leone, you were going to say something about billing.
Yeah. My main thing with this is, it kind of comes to the, what is your contract state with the insurances? I mean, that's something that, being in my role within my company, that's something that we tend to look at in terms of what we can bill. So, a commercial payer may allow for her to bill, manual therapy being performed by a tech the same way she can potentially delegate exercise tasks to that patient and bill for it as well. That's something that's probably going to be more up to the insurance. The question that I would have is, are you aware of what that insurance allows? And you billing it, do you know that that insurance does allow for you to bill for that tech providing that service? So that would be more my question for her is, do you even know what those contracts state?
I think for me, it gets a little, it's a slippery slope to bill and document based on what the insurance will and won't allow and pay for. I'm not sure about that. I think that, if the aide provided massage, it looks as though in this particular system that they have in WebPT, it looks like there's potential space for free text, which is where they wrote manual lumbar traction and noted a nodule the size of a quarter. I believe you could have put in there massage provided by the therapy tech, right? And it would have been very much, much more clear actually what was provided if that's the only code they had to choose from. That's not the case.
Yeah. Oh, that I agree with. But are we talking on the idea of billing that code? Or are we talking on the idea of what should be in the documentation? Because those are two completely different things in my mind.
Well, in this particular case, they're both in the same place. The code and then description under it is the same. There's nowhere else in the chart where it identifies.
This is because I'm familiar with WebPT. See, for me, if I was going to build a massage code, I'd build a massage code.
Okay.
I would choose that in the 97124. Sorry, go ahead.
No. Yeah. So I think that I don't want to, what her testimony was that she knew that insurance probably wouldn't pay for a massage or she billed for soft tissue mobilization.
Yeah. In my history with billing, like to me, massage, depending on the technique, obviously, But I mean, if you think of somebody doing petrissage, you know, to me, that's a soft tissue mobilization technique as well. I think it just kind of depends on how you read into that definition, what your interpretation of it is, because much like anything that we look at, whether it's Medicare guidelines or whatever, everybody's got a different interpretation of it. I definitely think that there's, you know, some intermixing of those two codes. So my issue is not necessarily that 97140 was billed. My issue is more along the lines of it wasn't documented correctly. You know, so if massage is what was performed by the technician, why wasn't it documented as having been performed by the technician? As opposed to, you know, yeah, are you billing it as 97140 or 97124?
And I think that will also fall in the next one, ARS 32-2044-20, maintaining appropriate medical records and yeah, documenting.
And this is Josh. My concern on both of those was the testimony. The reason we did it this way is because the insurance company won't pay for it if we do it the other way. I think that's really troubling testimony.
I totally agree with you.
But do we really know that they wouldn't pay for it too? Like, I would actually say, you know, is there confusion on that? Because again, in my experience, 97124 gets paid.
It gets paid at a much lower rate than soft tissue mobilization does.
And yeah, so that is true.
Yeah.
So I guess it depends now. Are you not billing it because you're not going to get paid as much, or are you not billing it because you didn't think it got paid? It's not a code that insurance takes.
Right.
That would be my question now.
And I don't know that that's our role as a board to determine what the practice does and doesn't believe. Right.
And I'm just thinking from the ethical standpoint of it.
I mean, ethically, I think it's really clear that we're supposed to bill for fees for services performed.
Yeah.
Right. Are there any other comments about charging unreasonable or fraudulent fees? Do you feel like the investigation and the responses support that allegation was proven?
I personally don't think so, as far as billing fraudulent fees, no.
Karen, do you have a thought?
Or Mark? Yeah, I don't think it was done fraudulently. I believe that it was a company policy that they were following without maybe having full knowledge. I believe it's really more of a record keeping problem. I don't like it, but I don't feel like it rises to the level of fraudulent billing.
Mark, did you have a comment?
No, I don't know. I mean, I don't like the word fraudulent in the statute there, because that means that implies intent or motivation, and I don't think that was the motivation. On the other hand, if you're billing a certain code because you know that if you don't, you're not going to get paid, then that rises to trying to perpetrate a fraud. But I think for me, it just goes back, you, regardless of what you get paid, you should bill for what you did, and that so that it reflects it accurately. If you did massage, bill a massage. If you did manual therapy, bill manual therapy. But manual therapy is done by skilled clinicians. So if you did gait training, you do bill for gait training, things like that. So
just as a point of clarity, I do want to point out that the statute is charging unreasonable or fraudulent, not and fraudulent. So you could take fraudulent out if that's more comfortable, if you're trying to decide whether or not the evidence supports this allegation as having been rising to the level of of an issue. Okay, so we'll move on then to ARS 32-2044-40, failing to maintain adequate patient records.
Yeah, and this is one along with just the first statute that we were talking on. This mm-hmm. is the other one that I think, you know, there's a huge issue with. You know, going back to what we were talking about in terms of the billing, you know, not documenting that the technician provided the service and what specifically was done by the technician. You know, if you look at the assessment on here, it really makes sense when you think about what Ms. Norfleet was telling us here, you know, about she went in there, talked to the patient, you know, prior to the treatment, asked how she was doing, and then, you know, asked her, oh, hey, did the traction help? Well, her assessment on here is good progress with traction treatment. So it really just outlines, like, that really is all you did in regards to this treatment. So it kind of goes back to the idea of, did you really provide any kind of assessment to this patient that it would allow you to know it was truly safe for you to delegate that task?
Along those lines, the R424304, enabling another physical therapist to assume this patient's care. Do you feel like, Karen or Mark, if you were covering this patient the next day, would you be able to take this note and pick up where the session before left off?
I think I could, providing I spent just a few minutes with the patient, you know, making sure that I understood the note correctly.
Okay.
Yeah. I do the same thing. When I take over for somebody, I always sit down with the patient first, find out what their area of concern is, and then I will do a quick assessment, whether it's range of motion or strength or something, to see where their current status is before we proceed.
Okay. Do you feel like the note's thorough enough to be able to? I think for me, I need more information, you know, as far as traction goes, like what position and how many pounds and, you know, what did that look like? I mean, I could probably figure it out, but I don't know that that's actually what the rule's supposed to infer, but, and then the second piece to this is, therapeutic intervention notes for each date that a therapeutic intervention is provided to a patient, the individual who provides the therapeutic intervention shall make the entry that meets the standards. So the investigative report summary is that all treatment notes are signed by Ms. Norfleet, although based on the licensee responses, she did not provide all the treatment. Any thoughts or comments about that for this particular rule?
I think it just goes back to the idea that it needed to be documented that the technician was the one that performed that specific treatment.
Thank you.
I will point out too, because I had asked this question, was manual traction performed during that visit? And on the flow sheet for June 25th, it shows manual traction checked off right there. Mm-hmm. And then, but it also shows sling traction put in there. So to me, that looks like both were performed. You know, now whether that's actually true or not, you know, it sounds like she's saying manual traction was not performed that day. But then again, it just goes back to the issue with the documentation. Why is it getting marked off? Is this just kind of habit now and we're just going through the flow sheet and marking everything off, whether it was done or not? So, I mean, I see a huge problem as far as the documentation goes.
Yeah, I'm with you. Yeah. Okay, so if I can summarize, and you guys please feel free to correct me if I am wrong, that it seems pretty clear that physical therapy interventions and treatments provided by the aide and billed by the PT may have been outside of routine tasks, that the investigative report the information that we have from the investigation and testimony supports ARS 32-2044 as rising to a violation. ARS 32-2044-20, failing to maintain adequate patient records, as well as R4-24-304C. Didn't feel that failing to supervise assistive personnel rose to the level of a violation. In our discussions, and charging unreasonable fraudulent fees, 32-2044-13. Was troubling, but potentially not proven. Does that summarize where we're at?
I think so.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So then our next task then is to determine actions.
Let me go out on a limb a little bit, and we'll soon find out if anybody else agrees with me. I think what we've got is a therapist. She's been a therapist for a long time, and I get the sense that she's actually a pretty good therapist. I think that she has, she's conscientious. I think she's maybe let a few things like documentation go by the wayside a little bit, relying on the company for billing, et cetera, utilizing texts the way that everybody else in the practice utilizes them. And so I would offer a non-disciplinary order for continuing education in the area of documentation, supervision, and billing.
Second.
Discussion.
And my only issue with that, and I'm not opposed to it necessarily, but is there something that we could also put in there as far, I don't know if whether it's continuing education or something else. One of my bigger concerns, regarding this is just the lack of assessment that really took place before delegating those tasks over to the tech. Again, our statute kind of leaves it a little bit of like gray area in terms of deciding what you think is routine task based on the person's skill set and their training. But I think that the one thing that can't be argued here is there was really a lack of assessment being done during that visit and possibly during other visits as well. So I don't know if that's something that can be, managed through continuing education. Is that something that maybe we need to go a different route with?
I think it could be done with continuing education. I mean, when you go to the classes on documentation, they're going to go over the fact that you document who did it and that you delegated this task to this person because of XYZ. And so I think that's going to be handled. If that's not enough, then you're talking about something a little bit more elaborate, which probably crosses the line and is no longer non-disciplinary.
Yeah, and that's what my assumption was on that. I don't know what everybody else has a thought on that as well.
I'm kind of on the fence on this one, whether disciplinary or not disciplinary. But as we continue to discuss, I do want to ask, though, I know we have a motion on the table in a second, but we really do need to finish the part of the factual allegations, findings of fact, and conclusions of law before we move into actual action. So,
Dr. I'm sorry, members of the board, to interrupt. If you're going to go the route of a non-disciplinary order for continuing education in the specific areas at the appropriate time, Dr. Cornwell, if you could just refine your motion to be a little bit more specific with respect to hours and the length of time in which she would need to complete the continuing education hours. And then we can incorporate a reference when you do that, Dr. Cornwell, perhaps some of the findings reflected in the investigative report.
I can certainly do that. If we get to conclusions of law, however, don't we run the risk that we're going to find a violation of a statute and then we order a non-disciplinary action for doing something?
Yes, that's why I was suggesting if we're going to go this non-disciplinary route, there wouldn't be the need to adopt findings of facts and conclusions of law. But what I would ask in your motion, if you could just reference perhaps some of the findings to reflect the basis for the courses that you're going to order her to complete.
Okay. All right. I can do that. So, all right. I move that we offer her a non-disciplinary board order of continuing education to include 6 hours of documentation and supervision based on the fact that the investigative report and testimony indicated that there were lapses in both documentation and missing information about delegation. I would also include 3 hours of billing, continuing education related to billing, and the proper use of billing and making sure that the bill reflects what was actually done. Again, based on both investigation and testimony given today. I'm going to put a 12-month probation. No, not we don't need a probation, do we? Okay. These can be done by a distance or virtual if necessary.
Mr. Cornwall, would you be open to a friendly amendment to change it from a board order to a consent agreement for non-disciplinary?
Kelly, if we're going to order it, we order it. A consent agreement would be something that they have agreed to. And so I don't think you really need a consent agreement. This would just be a board order. And I second the motion.
Yeah. Mr. Harris.
Sure. The only advantage, Dr. King, members of the board, Mr. Greer, to perhaps, you know, providing the opportunity for the licensee to sign a non-disciplinary consent agreement is that it just brings finality, because the licensee does have the ability to challenge a non-disciplinary order. If you wanted to, you could, you know, begin with offering a consent agreement for the terms, and if not accepted, just issue the order. But that's entirely up to the board.
All right. I'm failing to see the need to, I don't know. I'm not sure what to do now.
I think that,
I think I would favor just an order. We think that this is what she ought to do, and that this will make her practice better and will benefit her and her patients.
I think what Mr. Harris was saying was the difference in the consent agreement versus the order, as far as I understand, is that issuing a board order, she may appeal, which is certainly her right, but then it brings it back. It continues versus a consent agreement. This is what we found. It is what it is. And if you don't agree with it, then it moves into a board order.
And they're both board orders. Mm-hmm. They're both non-disciplinary board orders. But, you know, again, whether you want to take that initial step of offering the consent agreement first, or just because you do have the authority, as Dr. Cornwell pointed out, just to unilaterally order or issue the non-disciplinary order. Again, I defer to the board on that.
I guess I'm not sure it really matters to me then, because that would then you would end up in the same spot. So I'll change it to a consent.
And then if not accepted.
If not accepted, then it will move to a board order.
Thank you. Mr. Greer?
That's fine.
Can I ask a quick question? Was Ms. Norfleet given the information that Ms. Richardson found about all of the different states policies on use of assistive personnel?
Yes, I believe that was loaded in the folder that she could access.
Okay.
Yes, it was.
And so I think again, during a continuing education course on delegation, that would certainly be one of the things that would come up.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay. So we have a motion and a second for a non-disciplinary consent agreement. Mindy, do you want to, sorry, Judy, I keep calling you Mindy today. Do you want to summarize, please, the motion?
Clarification, please. You CE and continuing education, CE and documentation and supervision, that was 6 hours. How much was in billing?
Three.
And that was within 12 months.
Yeah. Okay. But early termination is certainly an option to her. Actually, no, I don't think you need that, do you? Because there is no probationary period. If she's going to do it or not, and
right,
and she can't use these towards her renewal period.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Yeah. I think that, let's be consistent. So yeah, it sounds like you need to delete the 12-month thing.
Well, we still need a time frame in which she's got to complete it.
Oh, I'll leave it in then. 12.
Okay. And the 6 hours of documentation and supervision and the 3 hours of billing is reflective of the findings, reflective of the lapses found in the investigation and the testimony regarding documentation, delegation, and billing.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Yes. Right.
Okay. I think I've got it. So the motion on the table is to issue a consent agreement for continuing education, which includes 6 hours of documentation and supervision and 3 hours of billing to be completed within 12 months, may be completed online and does not count towards renewal requirements. These continuing education required is reflective of the investigative report and the testimony that identified lapses in documentation, delegation, and billing. If the consent agreement is not accepted, the agreement will be moved to a board order. Dr. King?
Yes.
Dr. Bustillo?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Dr. Cornwell?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Motion passes.
Thank you for your time and attention. I just wanted to thank you all for your time and attention to the case.
Thank you. All right.
Judy, I had something come up. Will we have a quorum if I leave?
Yes.
May I be excused?
No.
No.
We won't have a quorum for.
Why? I thought I was still in charge. Sorry.
We won't have a quorum because I believe Mr. Leone is going to.
He's recusing himself.
Recusing on one of the items coming up.
We already completed those ones.
Not on these.
Okay.
Okay, so okay. JW or JP, thanks.
Sorry about that.
Okay, so Mr. Greer is, let the record reflect that Mr. Greer has left the meeting at 11:47 a.m.
Okay, so we are at agenda item number 9B, review, consideration, and possible action regarding opening a complaint and possible action for J.W. Mindy, do you want to give us a summary really quick?
One moment before we do that. That case, we've been recording since 9:58. Let me stop the recording and start again, please.
Okay.
We are stopping the recording at 11:48.